Right now, it is time to bring in Jim Lynch. It's time for Cover Your Assets. Jim is an independent voice on Wall Street, the economy, and politics. And Jim brings over 40 years of experience to those subjects and more. And we say good morning. Good morning, Jim. How are you this morning?
Good morning, Marshall. I'm fine. Yourself?
Can't complain. I'm inhaling and exhaling.
Well, that's a very good start.
That's the only way to start the day.
No, truly. You concentrate on that for half a minute and brings you back to...
Well, you know, it's funny you say that because the older I get, and now I'm 69, and I do have knee replacement surgery, which I'm not getting yet. But when I get up in the morning, instead of hopping right out of bed, I now swing over and I'll sit on the bed and I'll give myself about 2.5 to 3 minutes to wake the hell up and get up and then start my day. And you know what? It's made a big difference in my first trip to the bathroom. You know, I just feel stronger and better, and I'm not as woozy as I was. You know, the older we get, the little tougher it is to get up in the morning.
Remember, oh, how it is to get up
in the morning. That's right.
No, that's a great process, exercise, whatever that you're doing. I try to do that a little myself. Yeah. I don't sit on the end of the bed. I just wake myself up and then just focus a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, the body, it's like an engine. You've got to treat it kindly and oil it and start it up.
Well, you know, while we're starting off the show today, one thing I want to comment on, and I'll get your comments on it, the unfortunate shooting that took place with the female officer. And I have taken a lot of flack from people. It's a horrible thing. It shouldn't have happened, but it happens. And unfortunately, mistakes happen. Mistakes happen. And when mistakes happen with a gun, 9 out of 10 times, it's going to be deadly. The police officer, if you watch the video, as horrible as it is, and I did watch it, the minute she thought she fired the taser. She basically said, I shot him. And there's a lot of people which are saying it's a cover-up. It's not a cover-up. What I try to tell people, you see what happened in Minnesota with a police officer with a knee on somebody's neck for 9 minutes, and he's on trial for murder. Well, this officer, I think... should lose her job when they do all the investigations, but I try to tell the people, you don't understand. You're an officer. Maybe she was in that situation that she's never been in before. She was nervous. All the adrenaline. Maybe her training wasn't specifically good, and maybe it is the fact that instead of being racist and somebody who didn't like black people, maybe it is something as simple as a horrible, horrible, horrible mistake. People have to just take a step back and look at the situation and look at the facts, because we have a crisis in this country now that has come on in the past 4 years, where it's two steps away from a race war. So we've got to be very careful here. And no matter how many mistakes you see made by police officers, there's a difference between mistakes and there's a difference between racism. And I want people to understand that. And you can, if you calm down and you look at the situation, you can pretty much discern for yourself when a policeman or somebody in authority is acting as a racist, and where there's a possibility that a horrible mistake was made by a police officer in a shooting.
Well, I certainly don't know the intention of this person.
And we never will.
I've been on the police force for 26 years. That's a long time.
And we never will know the intentions. We just won't.
And the thing is, a taser and a gun, handgun, have a different feel, a different weight. That's part one. Part two is, they have been instructed to wear the taser on one side of the belt and the gun on the other side of the belt. that procedure was not, that rule was not followed. And there is very definitely tremendous responsibility for this shooting.
Yeah.
Racism, I wouldn't go there. It's too easy and murky and everything else with everything going on. But I do think that this does call up something that we started hearing about and then it kind of dropped. We are not training these people well enough, and we are not giving them that every 6 months, a year and a half, retraining, bringing them up to speed on things. And lastly, we're not training them how to condition themselves in tight situations. My God in heaven, of course, all of us would be concerned being involved with maybe there's a potential problem here with the person they're setting down. But we need to train. This can be trained. When you're in the military, you're trained. So when you go into battle, the fear, you get beyond the fear. Now, that's not the greatest thing for human beings, but it is something that happens. So this thing, but I would suggest, I'm trying to do this for myself and for everybody, get above this. Get above this, firstly, because it's very important that as fellow human beings, we maintain as much mental stability as we can living in our environment, at home or outside the home. And letting yourself get tamped down by this violence, which you really can't do anything about other than a vote for someone who wants to, we'll say, train more police better. But you have to get above this. This thing now, it's so repetitious, and I'm not going to cite the events of the last year. It would take the whole show. But we just got to rise above it. And you know what you do, Marshall, in the morning, I think is very helpful to you. It's helpful to me. It might be helpful for all of us to either do that or during the day take 10 minutes every day at a certain time and just focus on who we are and what we have and what we need to do and what our responsibilities are, and just get beyond sinking into this unfortunate happenings that are fraught with negativity and judgment and all kinds of things that are not good for us as human beings. And we can do something about these things by voting, by paying attention to the community, politics, and policing. So it's not that we don't have some kind of action to take, but the first action is to take care of yourself.
You know, and it goes along with something that happened in Virginia where that Army personnel was pepper sprayed and then two guns were drawn. And as they were telling him to get out of the car, he very honestly said to them, you know, I'm afraid to get out of the car. And the one police officer said to him, and you should be. There you go.
Yeah. And it's very clear on that video.
Yes.
That police officer sprayed that man. He's in Army fatigues. He's now suing the police department. This policeman should be locked up for assault and battery. There was no reason for him to do what he did. And see, there's a clear-cut thing.
Yep.
There's something that's very clear-cut. Now, when you say, okay, this guy did commit the crime, he's on video, put him in jail. Put him in jail, that's all. And we've got to do that. Now, the blue wall, supposedly, is coming down a little bit. I don't know if that's true. The trial of Floyd kind of shows that. But we need to go beyond that. We need to say, okay, everybody's equal. You do something wrong, you go to jail.
You know, it's just that we're in such a precarious position right now in this country. And more and more people have become more and more adjusted to letting their anger towards people who are not white Americans hang out there. And the tolerance level has just gone nowhere. And unfortunately, police are humans, and police represent a portion of the population that you and I both are. Now, we aren't under the pressure that they are when they're on the job, or like a firefighter or like a soldier or anything like that. But I did speak to a police officer. This is probably 5 years ago, Jim. And he was not really in favor of instantaneously putting people who come out of the armed forces on police forces, because there's two different protocols when you approach a situation in war and when you're a police officer and you're on the streets of America. And the major difference is that on the streets of America, and when you pull a gun, there's a lot more protocol that has to be followed than when you're in war and you're fighting a war. And that these people that come in from the military to police need that real thorough extra training that, hey, this is a totally different situation.
You are absolutely right. And we are now uncovering thousands of veterans who are in the police force who are leaning to white supremacy. And it's very simple. Going back to what I said earlier, a military person is trained. Let's just quickly say it and then get over it. They're trained to kill, and they're trained in violence. And if you are in the armed services for a couple of years, but maybe you're in for 5 or 6 years, you know, this is beaten into you. And if you happen to be in a war zone, well, you've got to go back on that philosophy to survive. But then when you come out of the war zone and you put in a position of power or authority, you don't just leave that training at the door. It's there. It's inbred. If any of you have been in the military, and I was in a very soft part of the military, the Navy. But the training that you're given is basically meant to subvert you as an individual and get you on the common ground of the fighting man, which is to fight and to kill. And so, therefore, we need to post-haste look at the situation. This gets back to what I said earlier about training and retraining and doing psychological makeups on these folks as they go into the job. It's a whole different thing now, unfortunately, in that this thing which has been in the armed services, this kind of, we'll say, white supremacy or we're the boys, we know best, that was exacerbated in the last 4 years. When you have the President of the United States speaking on television to hundreds of people in an audience and say, knock him out. Hit him. I'll pay the legal fees. And when you have the same president on Long Island in front of a lot of policemen saying, hey, listen, don't be so gentle on these guys when you put them in the car. That touches the raw nerve of something which is not very good. And I'm not excusing anybody who's done what they've done responding to the former president's hyperbole and threats and bullying. But I'm saying, there it is, folks, face it. And to anybody slipping now into politics who for some reason thinks the former president has any place in the political world, you got to look inside and say, what is wrong with me? And hopefully these trials of Trump will start taking place sooner than later. So we'll get all the dirty linen out legally, and we'll see what he has done to this country. And that I'm not saying these folks didn't have problems, but we've never seen what we've seen. People going to the capital of the United States of America, going and saying they're going to hang the Vice President of the United States, citing, where is Nancy Pelosi? On and on it goes. We've never had that in this country. But we should have known it was coming when those thugs took over the government building in Michigan, which happened earlier. You know, All the signs were there. You just didn't pay attention to them. Charlottesville. That was the beginning of a lot. Charlottesville. Remember those men marching with those candles, chanting? That's what Trump gave us. And people better wake up and say, okay, I better slow my mind down and recalculate and figure out. And in the process, he's been destroying whatever was left of the Democratic, the Republican Party.
I want to slip away for a second and ask you a couple of questions. Once again, I always like to bring this up when it happens, because and get your opinion for people that are listening. Once again, this morning, when it was announced, actually early this morning, about the J&J COVID vaccination causing eight women between 18 and 48, I think, to get a very different type of blood clot. So our country, with a strong FDA now again and CDC, said, let's take a pause on the Johnson & Johnson vaccine for now. Nobody panic, but we just, you know, we're going to take a pause on distributing it. And just take a look at this. And here's where people who follow the stock market on a day-to-day basis that don't know anything about the stock market don't understand. The futures immediately dropped a couple hundred points coming up when Wall Street opens up. People should not gauge the economy on Wall Street. I keep trying to say this to people. I'm not a Wall Street expert at all, not at all. But you just know that Wall Street is an indicator of big business, not street-level economics. Explain a little bit about that.
Well, a lot of the bullishness in the market, which has been going steadily higher for quite some time, was based on the fact that there was a vaccine and that there would be an end of the road to this thing and the economy would snap back. Now, indeed, some statistics indicate that employment is better, not really better, but better. And but the stock market itself is ruled by people who are investing for the long term. There are a lot of short-term traders, but they're basically buying for the long term. And so as the economy ticked up a little bit here during the pandemic, and more importantly, vaccines came out, people began to be more confident that, well, there will be a light at the end of the tunnel. Now you have this J&J thing, J&J situation where our government is pulling back and taking a look at it. And people immediately say, well, okay, maybe I was wrong. Maybe the economy won't snap back. Also, maybe people are not going to continue to take the vaccines. And so that would slow the economy down. So as I mentioned two shows ago, people have tremendous capital gains on the books. I went through it. I'll do it quickly. The low was 18,000. The high is right now 33,000. On the Dow Jones. There's a lot of room to take profits, and you can now take profits on a long-term capital gains rate. That said, we're dealing with a little bit of emotion, but we're also dealing with people who have made a lot of money in the stock market. And but let me come back to your point, Marshall. Absolutely, the stock market is not indicative of anything but people who have faith that things are going to get better, people who don't have faith that it's going to get better. So I'm oversimplifying the buyers and the sellers. And it's really that simple. But any given day in the stock market does not represent what is happening in the actual economy, because there are transactions being made that are very profitable. Businesses combining, companies taking over companies, that's happening whether the stock market is up or down on any given day. The thing that you do with the stock market is, if you are investing, be safe, be sound. You're investing as if you were going to a savings bank, but that's how safe you should kind of feel your securities are. If you want to speculate, then all bets are off. If you're speculating, you're going against the pros. And maybe you win, maybe you lose. But again, back to you, Marshall, and the point that these are prices that are happening, that nothing's happening in the economy. Now, if you have a major decline, yes, you will see something happening in the economy because people will sell, they'll get out, they'll become more conservative, and then the stock market has had an impact. We're talking a move of down 10, 20%. If it's off 3% during a given day, that really doesn't change people's expectations. Expectations don't change that quickly, either plus or minus.
Well, I always just like to point that out. We're out of time now. I'm so sorry about that. But I always like to point that out, that you just don't look at the stock market. Look at your general Broadway on your hometown. Look at your businesses in your hometown, your state, your region, and that gives you a much better idea of how the economy is either driving or not. Well, like I said, I'm sorry that I hogged the time with three different points, Jim. But
terrific. Very quickly. A great example of one of the best investors ever. His name happens to be Peter Lynch of the Fidelity Fund. One of his great investments came when his wife came home from shopping and said, oh, look what I have, these new holes, you know. And he said, oh, boy. And he said, what do you think? Yeah, I love these. You know, everybody's in there. He bought the stock, okay? It was that simple. He saw something that people wanted in the marketplace and would influence the company who was manufacturing them. So it is very practical in a certain way, but it's like watching a tote board. You know, there are no facts behind it. They're just numbers.
That's it.
And however, I caution that, you know, please keep in mind the market does have an impact.
Yep.
When things go very bad or very good.
That's it. Jim, we'll speak to you next week.
Amen.
Take
I'll
care.
I'll talk to you.
Jim Lynch, and Cover Your Assets this morning here on The Breakfast Club on Robinhood Radio.